This made me believe her, but the fragility around her eyes gave me pause. There was definitely more to the story than she was letting on, and for all I knew, it could have something to do with the decision she'd made to let me go yesterday. Was I the reason she couldn't go to her pack for help? I sure as hell hope not, but for some reason, I couldn't help feeling partially responsible. "Ricky, I'll help you." I moved closer to her and put one hand on her shoulder before pulling her close to me and holding her tightly. She smelled like wood smoke, lavender, and soap, and the combination was strangely appealing. She relaxed and looked up at me with eyes rimmed in tears. "Really?" She swallowed hard, and a tear slipped free and dribbled down her cheek. It was all I could do to keep from shaking with rage as I held her. How dare Pierce Ambrose kidnap Ricky's brother? What was it with all these supernatural jack-offs kidnapping people? Well, I might have been an ordinary, overconfident assassin in my past life, but I wasn't that guy anymore. Now I was a guy who had made a deal with the devil for magic. Now I could make them pay. And I would. "Really?" I said, and the smile that spread across her lips was like watching a baby bird fly for the first time. Chapter 5. "You don't have to do this, you know." Ricky wasn't quite looking at me. Even still, I could tell from the way the muscles in her neck twitched. She really wanted to glance at me, probably to gauge my reaction for the billionth time. Just like all the other times, though, she didn't even look at me. Instead, her gaze remained fixed outside the window of the bus, watching as the cars passed us by. I'll be the first to admit the bus wasn't my first choice, or even my third, fourth, or fifth choices. After we'd climbed the embankment and spied a bus pulling up to the stop across the street, it had seemed like a great means of escape. We had run across the street flailing and screaming. The driver, an old black lady with bleached blonde cornrows, had waited for us, bless her heart. So that's where we were now, in the back of the number 9 bus on our way to Little Tokyo. It wouldn't be the quickest way, but who would find us here? Slumming assassins? Still, I was getting a little tired of Ricky's continual barrage of reasons why I should leave her and her brother to their own devices. Even if I hadn't been going to wax Pierce Ambrose like one of Mr. Miyagi's old cars, I'd have wanted to help her. Besides, we both knew one thing to be true. She had come to see me to get my help. If she'd done that, she needed me. I wasn't sure why, but that meant something. That alone was enough to get me to help her, even if I felt slightly guilty for not letting her in on my own little Faustian deal to take out Pierce. Well, I'd tell her later. You know, after Pierce was dead and I had my family back. If, after this was all over, she wanted to call me a two-faced jerk and hit me with a werewolf-sized fist, I could live with that. Theoretically. "I know," I replied, fighting the urge to comfort her. We definitely weren't at that level of physical contact yet, and she might take it the wrong way. That was the absolute last thing I needed. I wasn't exactly 100% sure how a female werewolf fought off unwanted advances, but something told me it might reduce my overall quantity of limbs. And at the moment, I was pretty attached to them. Even still, the feeling to reach out and comfort her was nearly overwhelming. "You could get off this bus right now. We're still a few stops away." She hazarded a glance at me. Her eyes were red and puffy like she'd been crying. It was a little weird, since I hadn't seen her cry since we'd gotten on the bus. Then again, maybe it wasn't weird. She was both a werewolf and a woman, and I wasn't exactly an expert on either. Still, it didn't look like she wanted me to leave. More like she felt obligated to give me an out. "The only way I'm getting off this bus is to kick some ass or dance a jig," I said, grinning at her, even though I felt like a car salesman saying he had to check with the manager before he could lower the price because the beater in question was already such a bargain. "And I'm a terrible dancer when I'm sober." "Whatever, Mac," she said, narrowing her eyes at me. "If that is your real name." "Wouldn't you know if it was my real name?" I smirked. You knew me as a kid, after all. So you say? She waved off my comment with one hand. The nubs of her nails had been bitten down so far, it was a wonder she wasn't bleeding. Without thinking, I snatched her hand before she could go back to gnawing on her fingers. Her eyes widened as I reached out and brushed a lock of hair from her face. "I'm surprised you don't remember me," I said, my eyes roaming over her face. "I remember you. I forgot everything else, but I remember you."
"We were just kids," she said.
Color spread across her cheeks, making the smattering of freckles on her nose stand out. "Maybe if I had eyes like yours, you'd have remembered me," I said, tucking the strands of red hair behind her ear. "I could never forget them."
"What are you doing?"
she asked in a voice so quiet I almost didn't hear her. This was when I realized two things. The first was I had no idea what I was doing. The second was that our faces were really close together. Her lips were only a couple of inches from mine, and as I stared at them, I realized I really wanted to kiss her. The urge to pull her close to me and never let go was almost overwhelming, even though we were in the back of a bus heading toward our more than likely demise. There were probably worse things to be doing in such a situation. "The only thing I want to do right now is grab you up in my arms and never look back," I said. Where the hell had that come from? It didn't sound like something I'd say. But as the words left my mouth, I knew one thing to be true. I didn't regret saying it. Somehow it felt right. Thankfully, she didn't go all pissed-off werewolf woman on me. She simply gazed back into my eyes, and I could have sworn that despite the sadness etched into her features, she wanted to smile. The seconds stretched into what felt like eons as her gaze moved from my face to our hands and back up to my face. The look in her beautiful eyes gave me the impression she'd seen things deep down in my soul.
"You shouldn't want to do that," she whispered, and I had to strain to hear her speak.
She bit her lip nervously, but didn't look away from me.
"It's not safe for you to want to do that. Not safe for either of us."
"Maybe I don't care," I offered, smiling at her as best I could, even though my heart felt seconds from bursting. I couldn't understand why I felt this way so suddenly, but at the moment, I didn't care. I brushed her face with my knuckle, trailing it down her cheek. Her skin was so soft, so warm.
"You don't even know me,"
she replied in a totally serious voice that sort of shocked me. Still, she didn't pull her hand away. Instead, she looked down at our hands and took a huge gulp of air.
"Even if I wasn't a werewolf and you weren't accursed, you just think you like me because of adrenaline and pity. Neither of those things are a good foundation to form a relationship upon. Trust me on this one, Mac. This is all hormones."
She started to pull away, and as she did, it felt like she was wrenching a piece of me away with her. Yet I could feel the reluctance in her reaction. She didn't really believe what she'd said. Somehow that made me feel better. Not much better, mind you, but better.
"Maybe you're wrong," I said, trying my best to smile at her as her fingers slipped from my own, and I was left feeling cold and empty.
"Maybe," she replied, setting her newly freed hand in her lap like she had no idea what to do with it.
"But I've been to this particular rodeo before, Mac. Getting emotionally involved with each other before we storm a madman's castle is tantamount to suicide. We have no idea what will happen once we start gutting bad guys, but the absolute last thing I want is for either of us to do something stupid because our judgment is clouded by this."
She gestured at the two of us.
"But after this is all over, if we're both still alive, I'd be happy to revisit this."
She licked her lips, slowly dragging her tongue across them in an arc that made some very inappropriate thoughts dance through my brain. It was kind of lame of her, if you think about it,
since she'd just shut me down. I knew, just knew she was right, that we shouldn't be doing this right now. But watching her lips made me react in a way that would have been immediately apparent if I wasn't wearing a trench coat. As our bus rolled to a stop and the doors opened at the bus stop before ours, I opened my mouth to say something devilishly clever, only before I could, Ricky shimmied down into the tiny space between the floor and the seat in front of us and pulled me down on top of her.
"Maybe she didn't see us," she said before all the lights in the bus went out like the inside of a bar after last call, enveloping us in complete, bag over your head in a basement with the lights out, darkness. Only a second ago it had been broad daylight. This wasn't good, not by a long shot. Darkness crept over my flesh like slimy bugs as I reached out, trying to grab onto the seat in front of me to get my bearings. Only instead of grabbing the seat, I found myself reaching through empty air. How was that possible? My heart sped up in my chest, crashing against my ribs while fear tightened in my gut like a boa constrictor. I was on my feet in an instant. At least I thought I was on my feet, because I suddenly realized I couldn't feel the ground. Why couldn't I feel the ground? Something grabbed me around the throat, constricting my airflow like a noose made of shrapnel and hatred. I was jerked forward off my feet and dragged forward with my legs trailing painfully over what felt like hot coals. I did have a body still, and its name was Pain. My back smashed against something hard with a metallic clang that made me bite my tongue. The iron tang of blood filled my mouth as I stood there, dazed. I tried to move, to pull myself free, but before I could move more than a few inches, lashes of pure agony wrapped around my arms and legs. A scream ripped from my throat, but as it left my lips, it was swallowed by the darkness.
"Hello, lover," rasped a low, hungry voice in my ear.
The hair on the back of my neck stood straight up, as completely irrational fear made me tear at the bindings holding me. I needed to get free right now. I struggled at my bonds, even though all it did was tear the flesh from my bones, and strangely, that didn't bother me even one iota.
"Who do we have in there?"
I felt a tongue scrape along my cheek.
"Oh, your demon isn't home right now. Well, let's see if we can change that."
A flaming ice pick of pain stabbed my brain, and a scream that ravaged my throat exploded from my lips. There was a flurry of movement in the back of my mind as the demon who had given me my powers did the equivalent of an irritated cat awakening from a dead sleep. I got the vague impression of annoyance and disdain from the being, and as her condescension flowed through me, the agony enveloping me receded enough for me to think. It took one more look around, decided my situation didn't warrant further attention, and settled back down for a nap. Well, that was really helpful. A growl filled my ears, only this one came from my own throat as I called upon my power. My tattoos lit up like the Times Square Jumbotron, pushed the darkness back just enough for me to make out what looked like a tiny Middle Eastern girl with hair blacker than my damned arm and eyes that glowed with pale lavender fire. Her blood-red lips curled into a smug smile of satisfaction as she took me in.
"I expected more from the one who took down Van," she added, holding up one purple-nailed hand and pointing her index finger at me. "But if this is the extent of your power, you'll barely be a snack."
She pushed up the sleeve on my trench coat and shirt, revealing my blazing forearm. She shot me a saccharine smile before dragging her left fingernail along my right arm, splitting my flesh open and revealing both my ulna and radius to the light of day. Thankfully, no blood or pain flowed from the wound, because if it had, I'd have been in real trouble. Her lips curled into a pout.
"No blood," she said, her tongue flicking from between her yellowed, coffee-stained teeth as she spoke. "Pity."
"Sorry to disappoint," I said, trying with all my might to do more than stand there immobile. I failed to move even a millimeter.
You haven't yet begun to disappoint me, lover?
She cooed, voice husky, as she leaned close to my ear, brushing her obviously fake breasts against my arm.
But we have plenty of time for that.
Her hot breath tickled my flesh as she lowered her mouth to my wound and ran her tongue along the visible bone beneath my torn flesh. Chapter 6. She purred, voice thick and husky, as she pulled her mouth away from my wounded right arm and stared at me through half-lidded eyes.
You've got the good stuff.
She licked her lips as a slow grin spread across her face.
Unique, too. Never tasted anything like it.
She reached out and brushed my mop of dirty blonde hair out of my face, and little sparks of purple light jumped across her skin.
You'll fetch a high price.
She trailed her ice-cold fingers down my cheek.
What?
I asked, confusion chasing back my fear and revulsion.
Your arm will fetch a high price.
She shook her head like she was trying to focus, but it didn't seem to work. Instead, her eyes were drawn back to my black-as-pitch flesh. The look on her face made me think she was literally trying to decide whether or not to take a bite out of me. It was also when I noticed the roll of butcher's paper on the ground next to a cheap Rubbermaid cooler by her feet.
"Are you seriously saying what I think you're saying?"
I said, fear tinging my voice, even though I didn't mean for it to do so.
"You're not really going to cut my arm off and sell it to the highest bidder, are you?" "That's what I'd planned to do."
She bent down close to my arm and ran her fingers over my skin, and as she did so, the tattoos blazing crimson on my flesh dimmed. Scarlet sparks danced along the edges of her fingernails as she held them up and licked the light from her fingers. A shudder racked her body, and her knees went wobbly, which I could totally see because she was wearing a red vinyl skirt that ended just above them.
"But you're not going to do it now?"
I asked, and the relief flooding through me was a little disconcerting. I was Mac Brennan, after all, and I didn't get scared. Still, I'd be lying if I said having my arm hacked off by a psycho girl in goth clothing wasn't a touch terrifying.
Maybe.
She touched her chin with one long fingernail and looked into my eyes.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Normally by this time your arm would already be on its way to a Chinese market where it'd get ground up and put into some old guy's tea. But for you, I may just make an exception.
She sucked on her fingertip once more, and her eyes closed in near ecstasy.
"So what are you going to do?"
I said, wishing I still had my Desert Eagle so I could shoot her in her overly made-up raccoon face. There was no way in hell I was going to stand here bound in darkness and let her chop my arm off and brew it into some Chinese dong tea. At least I sort of hope not. She opened her eyes slowly and looked at me like a heroin addict who had just gotten her fix.
"I'm thinking I might just keep you all for myself. If I do it right, you'll last me a long time."
A knife that glinted evilly slipped from her black frilled cuff and into her right hand. She held the blade up in front of her eyes. Symbols I didn't understand, but which sort of resembled Norse runes, were etched into its obsidian surface.
"What do you say? Want to come home with me? I promise it will be fun."
She licked her lips like I was a prime corn-fed ribeye, and a shudder I couldn't help rippled down my spine. She was seriously going to eat me, and I did not want to be eaten, not even slightly.
"You don't have to do this,"
I said, while mentally begging the cat demon to do something to help me. Thankfully, the cat took notice of me. Unfortunately, she cast an annoyed glance at me.
Yes? The tone of her voice reverberating in my head made me think of a girl prematurely awoken from her beauty sleep after pulling an all-nighter. And here I was, all out of Starbucks. Please do something, I mentally pleaded, because talking aloud might make the girl about ready to go all sorts of slap-chop on my arm hurry. That was the absolute last thing I needed right now.
That sounds suspiciously like work, and I don't really want to do work.
The cat purred, glancing around before settling back down for her nap.
You'll be fine. Everything is not as it seems.
Then she winked at me and vanished, leaving me screaming into the void of my mind, which was as stupid-seeming as it sounds. The crazy drug addict girl snapped her fingers in front of my face.
Hey, numbnuts, pay attention. Don't go off into your happy place or wherever. I want you here for this. Fear makes the power stronger.
I glared at her.
Anger is fine, too. Pretty much anything dark side works in my book.
She reached out and tugged my trench coat down off my arm and scowled at my white button-up in dismay.
Buttons. Holy mother of Frigg, I hate buttons.
She frowned like I was the most inconsiderate person in the world. Sorry, I growled, as she tried vainly to push my cuff even farther up my arm, but it didn't make it much past my elbow. I'll try to be more considerate of your needs in the future.
That'd be nice, she replied, totally serious. Guess I'll just owe you a shirt. You can put it on my tab, okay?
She put the tip of the blade to the seam of my shirt between the arm and the shoulder.
Any last words?
Yeah, back off, bitch. He's mine. Ricky cried before a giant werewolf fist crashed into the side of the little goth girl's head and sent her flying. I'll be honest, I'd never been happier to see a hulking, pissed-off werewolf than I was right now. The darkness vanished in an instant, which was good, because it let me see the psycho bitch smash through the windshield of the bus, hit the street outside, and bounce a couple times. It was incredibly satisfying, let me tell you. The floor under me was covered in oily black sand. A black candle with symbols similar to the ones on the girl's knife blazed just a few inches from my feet. Ricky sent it toward the door with an insolent kick. The candle went out as it rolled down the stairs before bouncing out of the bus. The moment it touched the asphalt outside, whatever spell had been binding me to the wall evaporated. I fell forward onto my hands and knees as Ricky stepped in front of me, her massive werewolf bulk blocking the goth girl from view as she moved toward the exit. "We need to get out of here before she gets up," Ricky said, glancing at me to see if I was already moving. "I have no idea what other spells the demon hunter has up her sleeves, but none of them will be good." Her words made a little pang of terror surge up in me, but I pushed it down, trying to file the information that demon hunters were a thing and had my scent away for later. I could deal with that business tomorrow. Right now, I had to get up and follow Ricky out of the bus. It was easier said than done. I was only moving if you counted sucking in a great lungful of air while hunched over on the floor of a bus moving. Still, I had no desire to let the demon-hunting goth girl take another crack at removing my arm from my body. It goes without saying, but I was sort of attached to it. Ha ha. Yeah, that one never gets old. Speaking of never getting old, my arm still wasn't bleeding. I wasn't sure why, but I was willing to let it not bleed as long as I could. It was, however, starting to hurt. Bad. If I didn't do something soon, I was going to be in an ass-load of agony. Which was reasonable, given I had an 8-inch bone-deep cut in my right arm. Well, that could also be dealt with later. I shrugged my trench coat back on, forced myself to my feet, and followed Ricky out of the bus as quickly as I could. She was standing in the street in front of the bus.
but she hadn't reverted back to human form. That was probably bad, since she didn't strike me as someone who transformed willy-nilly. Then again, she had said earlier normal people didn't notice supernatural. Maybe this was a form of active camouflage? Even if that was the case, I really hoped no one saw her and freaked out. So far, the bus driver, along with all the other passengers, hadn't put up much of a fuss. But that was probably because they were slumped over unconscious. I'd sort of wondered what had happened to them when the lights went out. But being that they appeared to still be breathing, I was pretty sure Little Miss Wednesday Adams had just knocked them out. Well, good for her. Speaking of which, the goth girl was getting to her feet. Blood streaked her exposed flesh from where the asphalt had given her a bad case of cheese grater skin.
"It's not nice to sucker punch people," she said, reaching up and running one hand through her dark hair.
The huge silver rings in her ears caught the light and glinted malevolently. She was definitely up to something. Ricky stood only a few feet away, her muscles tightening beneath her skin in a way that reminded me of a cat about to pounce. It was a little weird, though. Why hadn't she already, oh, I don't know, disemboweled the goth chick? That's the first thing I'd have done. No, for some reason, Ricky had given the bitch time to get back up. Why had she done that?
"Back off, Maya,"
Ricky snarled, little flecks of froth accentuating her muzzle as she spoke.
"This one is my responsibility and under my protection."
"And if I don't?"
The goth girl, who knew Ricky and was also named Maya, said in a bitchy tone.
"What will you do?"
Before Ricky could respond, a devilish smile broke across Maya's lips.
"Oh, that's right. You'll do abso-frigging-lutely nothing. Now back off, Wolfie."
She took a step forward while reaching up under the back of her shirt with one hand.
"His arm is forfeit. The rest of him, well, it's all yours."
"Get down," I cried, dive-tackling the werewolf to the ground, which, let me tell you, was way harder than it sounded. It was like slamming into a small car made of flesh and bone. Or a pony. Yeah, let's go with pony. Have you ever tried to knock a pony out of the way by hurling your body at it? It's hard to do. But I did it, because I'm Mac Brennan. Hell yeah. We crashed to the asphalt as the crazy goth chick pulled a stockless Uzi from her blouse and unleashed a barrage of bullets that would have torn us to shreds. Even as it was, the shots passed so close to me the wind from them stung my eyes. Her gun bucked like a bronco in her hands as I leapt to my feet and threw myself at her. Let me just say this. Hitting her was quite unlike hitting Ricky. She went down like a drunk girl after prom. The back of her head cracked against the street, and her eyes went glassy and far off. Her weapon went skittering across the street, and pausing only to kick the bitch while she was down, I scrambled over to it. A moment later, I had the submachine gun in my left hand. I whirled, my finger already on the trigger, and pointed it at the still stunned Maya.
"Hey, you know what's cool? Not chopping off my arm," I growled, approaching the crazy bitch while Ricky stood there watching me with a strange look of oh shit on her face.
It was weird, because I felt pretty damned justified with myself right now, especially since I was about to get some answers, like who sent her, and how did she know about me when I didn't know about me.
"Don't shoot her,"
Ricky said way too quickly for me to think she didn't have an ulterior motive, which was sort of reasonable, given that she knew Maya. Maybe the girl had information?
"Why?"
I asked. Then I shot the goth bitch, because there was no reason good enough to not shoot her. The bullet smacked into Maya's right shoulder, damn near spinning her around in a spray of crimson. That seemed to bring the bitch around, because her eyes bolted open, and she screamed in a way that horrified me. Not because it was scary, but because I liked the terror in her scream. I was starting to see why I had chosen to be a hitman. I was really messed up. Ricky's toothy maw fell open in shock as Maya tried to get up, but evidently she wasn't used to having only one usable arm, because she lost her balance and fell back into the puddle of crimson slowly spreading around her body. I'd half expected her to bleed more, but after she came out of her daze, the blood had just stopped flowing from her wound. Evidently, the girl had a few tricks up her proverbial sleeve. Well, we couldn't have that. I approached Maya and shoved the submachine gun up under her chin.
If you even twitch weird, I'm going to rearrange your insides with bullets. Are we clear? I said, and my voice was low and empty.
Yes, she said, and her voice was defiant and angry. But you should know.
Mac, we need to get out of here, Ricky cried, running up to me in human form and pointing furiously ahead. I turned my head to see the strobing lights of police cars coming straight toward us. I wasn't quite sure why they were here already, or who had called them. But at the moment it didn't seem to matter, since I had a submachine gun pulled on a tiny bloody girl in the middle of the street. She was right. We needed to get out of here. Right now.
Chapter 7. We'll meet again, lover,
Maya called from behind me as Ricky and I raced away from her. The voice in my head had told me to shoot her, but instead I'd listened to the stupid, compassionate voice. Why? Because it had insisted on one crucial bit of information I couldn't sensibly ignore. What was that bit of information, you ask? That there was a huge difference between being spotted from far away with what might or might not be a submachine gun and shooting someone in plain view of the police. So I hadn't shot Maya in the face, even though I'd really wanted to do it. Even still, I didn't feel like it was the smart play. More the less bad play. If dealing with supernatural bad guys had taught me anything, it was that second chances to put them down cost a whole heck of a lot more than first chances did, and were twice as dicey. At least, that's what I told myself, because if I dwelt on the urge to kill raging inside me, I might realize I had wanted to shoot her for other, darker reasons. That wasn't something I could deal with right now. No, right now I needed to get the hell out of Dodge.
Ignore her, she was just trying to get in your head, and we can't have that right now.
Ricky huffed as she rounded the corner just ahead of me. We need to find somewhere to lie low. If we do, I can get us out of here, okay? Yeah, I said between gulps of air. I really needed to get on that whole cardio thing. This gig was starting to have quite a bit more running than I was used to doing. I mean, I wasn't out of shape exactly, but here's the thing about running. Running is what other sports do as punishment. As I rounded the corner, I shoved the Uzi under my trench coat and wedged the weapon into the waistband of my slacks so it wouldn't be immediately visible to the old guy staring at me from behind his walker. Which was also pretty much when I heard the helicopter. It was still too far away for me to be 100% positive from the sound alone, but I was giving it better than 50-50 odds, especially given my luck as of late. If the police had called in a chopper, we were going to be in even more trouble real fast. Ricky must have heard the sound of a helicopter, too, because her ears perked up a split second before she surged ahead, pausing only momentarily to snag a blue and gold sweatshirt and matching baseball cap off the display outside one of those kiosks that sold souvenirs. By the time I passed the kiosk a second later, she had them on, and oddly enough, looked like a completely different person, which was probably the goal. I had half a mind to do the same thing, but unfortunately I only made it about two more steps before the angry clerk, a bald-headed man in his late 50s with a cigarette in his mouth and skin the color of bad tea, came roaring off his stool, hollering in a language I didn't understand. I took one look at him and decided I didn't want to find out if the thing he was reaching for inside his kiosk was actually a shotgun. Ricky didn't even look back at him because she was too busy darting into the traffic-filled street. I followed behind her, hoping she had some kind of plan. Apparently she did, because a second later, she straight-up clotheslined a dude right off his crotch-rocket motorcycle. The guy wasn't going fast enough to get seriously hurt, because traffic was at a near standstill. The rider crashed to the ground flat on his back, his black and white helmet smacking into the asphalt with a sickening thwack. Ricky didn't even pause as she lifted the green Yamaha FZ09 off the street and spun it around so it was facing oncoming traffic before jumping on. The whole thing had taken less than half a second. "Get on, Mac," she called, gesturing at me with one hand. I did as I was told, even though it meant I was riding bitch behind a tiny girl with braces who had just manhandled a motorcycle like it was a toy. My butt had barely hit the seat when she took off, gunning the throttle for all it was worth. I grabbed hold of her, wrapping my arms around her tiny waist as she weaved through the stopped traffic at a billion miles an hour. Part of me was glad she was driving, because she had superhuman reflexes, and we were on the run. But most of me was praying to any and all deities to not let me end up as a skid mark on the road. Even with the Yamaha racing through the streets at breakneck speed, the sound of the helicopter getting closer filled my ears. I hazarded a glance over my shoulder and saw it coming across the horizon like a bird of prey. As it zoomed closer, a gut punch of fear and horror smashed into me.
Ricky, I have good news and bad news,
I cried, even though I was only a couple inches from her ear.
That's not a police helicopter. That's one of those black helicopters you see in documentaries about the NWO. It even has a couple of guys hanging out of it armed with what look like belt-fed Browning M2 machine guns. Those things can spit out over 450 rounds of 50-caliber BMG a minute.
Talk about overkill, Ricky replied, bearing down on the bike, causing the engine to roar like it was fueled by concentrated hellfire. It wasn't enough. The NWO guys were gaining on us. Fast. Whoever their pilot was definitely knew what the hell he was doing. As I calculated the absolute limit on the effective range of my submachine gun, I grunted in anger. The helicopter's guns would have us in range long before I'd even come close to being able to make my Uzi count, assuming it could even penetrate the helicopter's skin. Under normal circumstances, a bullet might be a bullet, but I was willing to bet that helicopter was all sorts of armored.
Ricky, you need to step on it, I said. If you don't get us out of here in the next few seconds, those guns are going to tear us to shreds.
I'm giving it all she's got, Captain, Ricky yelled in a pretty good imitation of Scotty from Star Trek. It made me smile, even though this was supposed to be a serious situation with serious consequences, which was probably her goal.
I'm serious.
The rest of my words were cut off as gunfire erupted all around us. Hundreds of rounds tore up the surrounding vehicles as we bobbed and weaved through the cars, because collateral damage apparently wasn't a thing that bothered them. What dicks. I had half a mind to see how they fared against a handful of hellfire, but I wasn't exactly confident I could effectively fling fireballs while on the back of a motorcycle weaving through traffic. If I missed and hit a building, or even an electrical pole, who knows what would have happened. Then again, they were shooting at us through a crowded street. Still, even though they were tearing the cars around us to shreds, they hadn't put a single bullet through a windshield, or really any place where someone might get hurt. It was sort of incredible if you thought about it. Ricky twisted the bike sideways, bringing us toward a parking garage that would provide us cover, and, you know, leave us trapped like rats. Bullets chased us the whole way, ripping into the cement pillars supporting the building as we zoomed inside, straight toward those car spikes designed to give jerks going the wrong way a bad day. Before they could do the same to us, Ricky jerked the bike up into the air in a massive display of strength. The motorcycle lifted off the ground, and we shot over the spikes and landed hard on the other side, unscathed, just as the barricade barring unauthorized entry slammed down behind us. Our tires spun, caught the cement in a screech of burning rubber, and sent us rocketing into the depths of the garage.
"Well, this is fun. I can't wait for our second date," Ricky said, a touch of humor in her voice as she twisted the bike and headed upward into the depths of the building while I struggled to process what had just happened. It seemed totally insane. Had we seriously just been chased through downtown by the NWO? More likely, those had been Pierce's goons,
but the guy had to be pretty ballsy to send a helicopter to shoot up civilians in the hopes of getting me. Even for him, there had to be some consequences for something like that. Well, maybe not him, but definitely someone who worked for him. I sighed. No, this would definitely fall upon the head of some poor schmuck just trying to do what his idiot boss had told him. "So what's the plan?" I asked, ignoring her comment about the date as I looked around to see if anyone had followed inside. No one had, but that didn't mean they wouldn't. If these guys were insane enough to shoot up traffic in the middle of the day just to get us, I put their compunction about blowing the hell out of this parking garage at right around zero. "We find another vehicle and cruise out of here before more dweebs come inside and kill us?" she said, totally using the word dweeb. I mean, who says that? What the hell is a dweeb anyway? "And if they just shoot every car that leaves?" I asked, because I would totally do that if I was willing to shoot random bystanders to get my target. "That, is an excellent point." Ricky swallowed hard as we rounded another corner in search of a vehicle that would meet her needs. Unfortunately, I was pretty sure this place was fresh out of Abram's tanks. "I don't know what to do then, but I'm open to suggestions."
"We go with the best defense. Offense," I said, a smile crossing my lips as I stared at all the shiny cars. "But we might need a distraction."
"Okay. What do you want me to do, specifically?" Ricky asked, slowing to a stop in the middle of the parking garage and looking at me.
"Take me to the roof," I said, only half paying attention to her, because I was suddenly too busy wondering which car would be more likely to cause the bigger explosion, the Frontier or the Jetta. The correct answer was, of course, why choose?
"Isn't the roof where they will have a clear shot at us?" Ricky said as she turned back around and gunned the motorcycle.
"Only if they expect us to be up there. And they won't, because that shit is suicide."
I smiled again and unloaded my Uzi into both cars until flames started pouring out.
"Unless, of course, they are expecting the unexpected."
I shrugged, but I don't think she saw it. "Great, now the Animaniacs theme song is going to be stuck in my head all damned day," Ricky growled, not even bothering to ask why I just wasted all of my bullets on cars with no bad guys in them. Evidently, she trusted my judgment. Well, there was no way we could still be friends then. People who trust me can't be trusted to make good decisions.
"They're zany to the max," I replied, squeezing her shoulder. "So just sit back and relax."
"Have I told you how much I hate you?" Ricky asked as we neared the roof. The two cars below us in the garage exploded, causing the whole parking garage to shudder and sway. Good. Anyone worth their salt would be trying to figure out what had just happened, instead of watching the roof for insane people on motorcycles.
"See, I hear you saying hate, but what I think you really mean is love," I replied, while getting slowly to my feet on the back of the Yamaha.
Ahead, I could just make out the body of the helicopter hovering in front of the building. The gunners were below my line of sight, no doubt getting ready to fill us full of lead the moment we appeared. Well, they were in for a rude awakening, Mac Brennan style.
"What are you doing?"
Ricky shrieked, sparing me a glance as we moved steadily out into the open.
"Do you trust me?" I asked, holding onto her shoulder for balance.
She nodded.
"Yep. Definitely couldn't be friends."
"Gun it." Bless her heart, she did as I asked. I was somewhat surprised, because I was pretty sure most people would be wondering what I was planning. Ricky didn't. She just hit the throttle on the bike and sent us surging toward the helicopter. It must have caught sight of us as we zoomed out from cover, because it began to rise, presumably to get into position to blow us to Kingdom Come.
"Brake!"
I called when the concrete embankment was only a few feet away. In front of us, I could see a bald man in a suit already starting to bring the Browning M2 up. Ricky braked. I went flying through the air like a goddamned missile, which was the whole idea.
I curled my right hand into a fist, and a lance of agony exploded down my side. Blood began to pour from my wounded arm, but I ignored it as I reared back and called upon all my rage and desperation.
Ignis,
I cried with everything inside me. My tattoos came to life in an explosion of scarlet starfire, spilling crimson light all around me as flame the color of hell itself filled my hand. I slammed my hellfire-wreathed fist into the side of the helicopter's cockpit, which was pretty much when I realized punching a helicopter in the face 6 stories in the air was probably not my smartest move, and I should have just blasted it from the roof with my demon fire. My world was suddenly enveloped in a burning fireball of doom that flung me backward in a flurry of busted glass and sheared-off metal. The smell of burning flesh and hair filled my nose as I threw my other arm up in a vain attempt to shield myself with my trench coat from the chunks of flaming debris raining down all around me. Something struck my lower abdomen hard enough to drive the breath from my lungs, and everything went white with pain. I slammed backward onto the roof of the parking garage so hard everything inside me seemed to break. My vision went dark and hazy around the edge. As I laid there struggling to breathe, or even roll myself into a fetal position, a hunk of flaming metal the size of a chest freezer fell on top of me. Chapter 8. My eyes snapped open and I surged upward, instinctively throwing my arms up to defend against an attack that wasn't there. I found myself naked in a bathtub full of ice, and in more pain than I could have imagined. The bottom of the tub, along with the surrounding bathroom, was splattered with blood. And not just a little blood, but a whole lot of blood. I reached down, intending to shove my hands through the ice and feel for my kidneys to make sure they, along with all my other important organs, were still there. But pain so acute I could barely breathe past it exploded along the length of my right arm. A scream of agony I couldn't contain tore from my throat, and the handle on the door of the pay-by-the-hour motel jiggled with way too much feeling. I wasn't sure who was out there, or how I'd gotten into my current predicament, but there was no way I was going to lay here and let someone come carve out my organs or slice off my arm. I ground my teeth together and used up pretty much all my manliness points to pull myself out of the ice-filled tub. I landed hard on the cheap, stained linoleum and tried to make my body move. But my abdomen screamed at me to stop torturing it, but I ignored it as best I could. I stifled a cry, pushing down the fire roiling in my guts, and grabbed onto the toilet with my left hand. My muscles corded as I pushed myself into a semi-sitting position. Pale light spilled from my right arm, causing me to suck in a sharp breath. My arm was on fire, figuratively, not literally. In fact, my demonic arm throbbed so badly, I was pretty sure I was dead. Only that had likely hurt less. That's when I remembered it had been carved like a Thanksgiving turkey. I hazarded a glance at my arm as the smell of burning flesh filled my nose. It looked like someone had used an honest-to-God office stapler to staple the cut in my arm closed before wrapping it in duct tape. Blood oozed out from the wound anyway, dripping down my wrist and spattering the floor with thin, steaming droplets.
I need to stop winding up in situations like this, I muttered, trying to figure out what had happened, because the last thing I remembered was trying to Mike Tyson a helicopter and getting my dumb ass blown up. How had I wound up here? Had Pierce's men managed to capture me afterward? What about Ricky? Where was she? Was she okay? I had to find out.
As the door began to swing inward toward me, I somehow got my naked legs under me and flung myself at the door, intending to hit it with my shoulder and knock it closed. But my feet slipped on the blood-slick linoleum. I wound up pitching forward, flailing my arms like an idiot. I careened forward as the door swung fully open and crashed into a brunette wearing pink scrubs and carrying a black medical bag with the weird snake symbol on it. Our collision drove her backward into the hallway, and we collapsed into a heap atop the frayed green carpet. Ricky sat bolt upright on the frumpy queen bed to the right and stared at me like I was absolutely insane. "What the hell are you doing, Mac?" Sarah cried, shock filling her girl-next-door features, which was totally reasonable given that I was lying naked and bleeding on top of her.
trying to keep you from stealing my organs," I hollered. While the words hadn't sounded insane in my head, they sure did once they were out in the open. I tried to crawl off of her, but only succeeded in putting weight on my torn up right arm. The world went spotty and shrapnel-filled. I fell back on top of her, my forehead smacking against her chest. "Mac, I put you in the ice so you wouldn't overheat," Ricky called, leaping from the bed and coming toward us. "You used so much power, your body was about to combust. Your skin started flaking away like ash." She grabbed hold of my left arm and forcibly pulled me off Sarah, who was still on her butt in the hallway of the cheap motel room. She hadn't so much as moved since I'd tackled her.
"What are you talking about?" I cried, whirling toward Ricky and jerking my arm out of her grip.
It hadn't been my brightest play, because it caused me to lose my balance, and I wound up flopping into her. Ricky grunted, catching me and keeping me from braining myself on the tiny television stand.
"You need to calm down, Mac. No one is going to steal your stupid organs."
Ricky made a disgusted face at me. "I own buildings, plural, as in more than one. I don't need to sell your kidneys for cash." Ricky began dragging me back toward the bathroom with so little effort it made me wonder just how strong she was.
"Unless you think I was going to eat them?"
She gave me a withering look.
"Have you ever eaten liver? It's disgusting. Whenever it gets served, I just pick at the onions."
"Well, maybe you just wanted my skin cool to the touch before you had your way with me," I said in a display of complete and total ridiculousness.
"Trust me, Mac. If you ever get lucky enough to find out what that's like, you'll be conscious,"
she said, a slight flush coloring her cheeks as she spoke. Was she imagining such a scenario?
"Ricky called me to take a look at you on account of your arm," Sarah said, injecting her voice into the conversation like a calm wind buffeting against the fury of Ricky's annoyance.
She was back on her feet, medical bag clasped in one hand.
"But if you don't want me to examine you, I can show myself out."
Her eyes roamed over my body as she spoke, and I realized I was stark naked in front of her for the second time in as many days. The last time had ended with her pulling a gun on me. This time wasn't looking like it was going to end much better.
"No, it's okay. I'm all done freaking out," I replied, noting the blush settling on her cheeks as she looked away from me. "But you are officially the least fun female to be naked around."
Ricky smacked me upside the back of the head and flung me back into the tub way more violently than was necessary. The ice beneath me began to melt as I sank into the depths of the tub. Almost immediately, I felt a lot better. You know, barring the whole duct tape and stapled arm thing. Maybe I had really been about to combust. Apparently that was the thing. Good to know.
"Sadly, you are not the least fun naked man I've been around,"
Sarah deadpanned as she stepped into the room and set her bag on the small counter.
"Do you need me to hold him down?"
Ricky asked, tossing a predatory glance at Sarah that made me think she might enjoy drowning me in ice cubes.
"Because I'm totally up for that."
"Mac, do you need Ricky to hold you down, or are you man enough for me to stitch up your arm without freaking out?" Sarah asked me, and there was only a faint trace of humor in her voice.
"I think I can manage," I said, looking away from the two women as they exchanged a mental conversation I couldn't follow.
"I'll be in the other room, then. Try not to scream too much, Mac. Kung Fu Panda just doesn't sound the same when they're screaming in